that it's not real. But on deeper inspection, what it's saying is this. Fantasy succeeds by becoming a believable extension of what we as readers, as people, already understand, what we believe, what we know. And by painting fantasy and reality with the same fine brush, you make it impossible to differentiate the strokes. They blend together, helping to create a new image, one that is neither and both. This is Susanna Clarke's great feat. It's not that she tells the story of a world possessing magic. It's that she convinces us that magic lives in ours, not as a whimsical addition to a world we already know, but as a fundamental part of it, stamped into the foundation, intrinsic and essential, something that can be studied, comprehended, mastered, as rule-bound as math or physics. She melds the magic and the mundane, the fantastic and the ordinary. Now, as an author, I can grasp the magnitude of what she's managed, but nearly 20 years ago, leaning back against the wall outside a college classroom, I was simply consumed by the idea of it, the question creeping through my mind. What if? Not just what if the magic was real, but what if magic was as organic as any other element in nature? What if it followed rules like science and language and math? What if it wasn't a matter of real versus not real, but mysterious versus understood, something that could be learned? What if? Those, I've come to believe, are two of the most powerful words in existence. They bind the writer and the reader. They inspire one and convert the other. They make space not for wholesale belief, but for something cleverer, doubt. You see, a book like this doesn't ask you to believe in fantasy. No, instead, it simply plants a seed of doubt about the limits of what's real. And a seed like that in the right fertile soil will sprout on its own and grow. Over the last 20 years, this book, this incredible, ambitious, powerful book, has taken root in so many readers' hearts and minds and helped nurture a generation of writers like me, ones hoping to plant those same seeds of doubt, to create stories that don't ask you to choose between magic and reality when the answer need not be either or, but both. V.E. Schwab, May 2024.
Volume 1. Mr. Norrell. He hardly ever spoke of magic, and when he did, it was like a history lesson, and no one could bear to listen to him. 1. The Library at Hurtview. Autumn 1806 to January 1807. Some years ago, there was in the city of York a society of magicians. They met upon the third Wednesday of every month, and read each other long, dull papers upon the history of English magic. They were gentlemen magicians, which is to say they had never harmed anyone by magic, nor ever done anyone the slightest good. In fact, to own the truth, not one of these magicians had ever cast the smallest spell, nor by magic caused one leaf to tremble upon a tree, made one mote of dust to alter its course, or changed a single hair upon anyone's head. But, with this one minor reservation, they enjoyed a reputation as some of the wisest and most magical gentlemen in Yorkshire. A great magician has said of his profession that its practitioners must pound and rack their brains to make the least learning go in, but quarrelling always comes very naturally to them. The History and Practice of English Magic by Jonathan Strange, Volume 1, Chapter 2, published by John Murray, London, 1816. And the York magicians had proved the truth of this for a number of years. In the autumn of 1806, they received an addition in a gentleman called John Segundus. At the first meeting that he attended, Mr. Segundus rose and addressed the society. He began by complimenting the gentlemen upon their distinguished history. He listed the many celebrated magicians and historians that had, at one time or another, belonged to the York Society. He hinted that it had been no small inducement to him in coming to York to know of the existence of such a society. Northern magicians, he reminded his audience, had always been better respected than southern ones. Mr. Segundus said that he had studied magic for many years and knew the histories of all the great magicians of long ago. He read the new publications upon the subject, and had even made a modest contribution to that.